So, hi folks, Jack Spiergo here. This is going to sound like a podcast, but it's not really a podcast. It's going to be completely unedited, no intro, no nothing like that. It's Labor Day, and it's also raining outside. And I decided I wasn't going to do a survival podcast show today, and it seemed like a good little bit of downtime this morning to answer a lot of questions, concerns, and comments on the Perma Ethos blog. I did a post, and all but a few of the replies are mine, called What Do You Want to Know About Perma Ethos? And I figured I'd get, you know, 6, 7, 8 solid questions, and over the next week or two I would blog answers to them. There's 80 comments there now, and maybe 5 are from me or 6 are from me, maybe 10. Maybe a few are random follow-ups from other people, so you're probably looking at 50 good solid questions there. I'm going to do my best to answer as many of those as possible. I also did a post called Some Ideas About Our Biggest Concerns, and there's over 30 replies to that. So if I were to take and try to do this all by text, it would take an awful long time, and hopefully this will become, you know, a foundational archive when people are new to the concept, coming to the Perma Ethos blog and wanting to learn more about it and get a sense of direction where we're going. There's a lot of important things I want to cover today before I even get into the stuff that's been posted. Number one is that if you want to remain updated on this, it's really important that you, at permaethos.com, you'll see now up in the right-hand upper column on the right, unless I change the outlay of the blog later, but it'll be up top. It'll say subscribe to updates, and there's a place to enter your email address. That does not put you onto a typical email list where I can email you about a bunch of random stuff. I can't actually even see that you're on there. All it does is basically tell my feed burner service, hey, whenever you post a new thing, email this person and it says there's a new post over at permaethos.com. That's all that will ever do. I'm going to work real hard to not turn my survival podcast into an infomercial line for Perma Ethos. And I want to keep most of Perma Ethos content over here. And the other thing I want to do is basically, the TSP brand has a huge promotion potential for Perma Ethos that both investors and potential lessees should be interested in harnessing. But what I want to do is whenever I have updates about it, just simply say over at TSP, hey, we have an update over there. And that way, there's 85,000 people that listen to TSP, and I'll bet you, I don't know, half of them have no real deep interest in this. Then there's a lot of people that want to kind of watch, but they're not really interested in getting involved, and they need to decide how much detail they want. Then there's the core group. I would say there's hundreds that are like putting their hands up and saying, I either want to be an investor or a community member. And that's what this is for. So I want to try to pull all of the deep details here and keep that separation for the benefit of both parties. So make sure you subscribe. The next thing I'm going to tell you is either today or tomorrow there'll be an ability on the blog, the permaethos.com blog, to fill out a form as a potential investor or potential leaser of property. It will not be a long form, but it will ask some very critical information. What I'm going to want to do is sit down with some of my friends in business and go through these numbers and start to ferret out the feasibility of going forward and the cost of going forward and put together a story for the investor so that the investor can feel comfortable, because I'm going to get into sort of the how of the process today. And that means that the investor is going to have to be comfortable before we probably find the piece of land. Basically, we're going to set parameters, and then we'll buy into the company equally as investors, shareholders, and then the company will acquire the land. And that's the only way I know to protect this as best we can legally. So it's important that we start to be able to look at our potential investment pool and screen our investors and understand what they bring to the table from a standpoint of morality and ethics, of permaculture vision, of financial capability, of business know-how, and of a commitment beyond investment into the community as to what they could bring to the table. And we've already had some potential investors that have brought up some very interesting skill sets that they have that would be more along the lines of how they would operate and function at the community layer. Okay, so that's going to give us kind of a feel for where we're at with this today. So let me get into all of these questions, comments, and I'm just going to read them. There's no real format here. I'm going to go in the order that they were asked. And there might be some times where I sound like I'm going, just don't worry about that right now. And I want you to understand, if you hear that from me, it's not we're never going to care about that. It's that that's going on the later shelf, right? And there may be some things that they just go, we're not going to be doing that. And that's going on not really the never shelf, but the probably never shelf. As you develop something like this, it takes me back to a saying we had in the military. No battle plan survives contact with the enemy. In other words, you put this plan together, and then the plan has to be fluid as you move through it, and things that seem like a really bad idea the day you go into it turn out to be really good ideas. But until you, there's going to be a lot of this stuff that's going to be like, well, you know, do we find 400 acres that we can afford with the investor capital that we have, and it's got a river running, you know, on one border or through the middle of it, or did we have to settle for 200 acres with no real surface water other than a few ponds and the ones we're going to put in? And that, you know, which county do we find the land in, and how lax is zoning in that county? So there's a lot of stuff that people are going, what about why this? Why not that? Why not this? It's like, that's down in the weeds, and we're still up in the air looking at this from a helicopter. So we kind of have to put things in order based on that. So, and some of this is why, I don't want anybody to take this wrong, but the investor pool will be limited. We won't take everybody that says they want to invest. First of all, we're going to want to qualify investors fiscally. If an investor is going to put all that they have into this, and they're going to be in real dire straits because of it, I don't want you, because you can't make a good business decision when you're like that. When you're like, if this fails, it doesn't work, even though I see no way this fails, okay? But when you feel that way, you make poor decisions. So I don't want anybody looting the kids' college fund for this or anything like that. I want people that fiscally can afford to invest. I also want people with an understanding of the ethics and what this community is about that want their investment back, yes, yes. And they want an annuity that will last a lifetime, yes. But it's not a way to get rich. Now, down the road, if we can make one work, we can make a dozen work. And it can be a very great opportunity at that point. But at this point, this is mission-oriented investing. So those are important. But what's really important is, I don't care whether the person's been in business or not, do you have a business mind? Can you look at a problem and evaluate the numbers behind it, yes, with ethics, but completely cold and dispassionate to your own personal desires? That is how a community like this must be run, to protect the investment of not just the investors, but the significant long-term investment of people that are leasing property for 99 years. When you have a decision to make, you look at the decision from a fiscal responsibility standpoint. I'd love a lake there, yes, but it would be very expensive, and there's other things that must be seen to first for the good of the community. Therefore, fiscally, that doesn't fit right now. Or if we put that in right now, it's a tremendous asset, and it will enable all these other things and shortcut project. That's how it has to always be done. So I'm going to be answering questions that way today. And if you've put your hand up and said, I think I want to invest, and then when I answer a question that way, you're like, I don't like that, maybe this isn't an investment you need to be making at that level. Maybe it's something to consider the lease investment. Because if you can't handle that, and I've already talked to a few people that have a hard time with it, if you can't handle that, you're not going to be able to handle being part of a 10 or 12 member board of directors that are all shareholders when we sit down to a quarterly meeting together and discuss very important decisions. Do we approve or disprove or re-recommend things to the council that's brought them to us? And you have to be this kind of person for this to work. We sit down and you put up an idea and everybody on the board looks at it, immediately sees what you did and just cuts it to pieces. And you go, okay, well, that's not going to happen. We're not going to do that. And then when we're done, everybody can go out and have a glass of wine and a steak together, and you can be okay with each other. Right? Or you put up your idea, everybody cuts it to pieces, then you explain it. Most people really like the idea and get on board with you, but the few people that still are not sold on it that have been now outvoted in this decision have to also be able to do that. And if you can't have that compartmentalization, we're discussing business, it's cold, it's direct, it's fiscal responsibility, it is it, and it's done. And then when we walk away from there, we're all friends because we all have the same mission and same goal. That's the compartmentalization necessary to be an investor in something like this. You're talking about making decisions that are going to affect hundreds of people who have faith and trust in you. And that means you have to be able to be like mom and dad were when you were kids. They're going to have an argument about what to do. They're going to take it away from, not do it in front of the kids. They're going to sort it out. They're going to come to a united decision. They're going to present it united, and it's going to go, any animosity goes away. That's how you run a solid family, and in some ways it's what you're doing here. So that's where I'm coming from. I know I spent some time on it, but I think that should make people more comfortable taking on a lease like this and investing like this. And if somebody can't handle that, I really don't want them as an investor. And I don't mean to sound, you know, mean or anything, but it's just that's how money must be managed, especially money on behalf. And I wish our Congress managed money that way. Can you imagine how much crap we wouldn't waste money on? So let's get into it. Brian asks, are you thinking of setting this up as a template so it could be easily used in other locations? I'm very interested but have no desire to move to Texas from Oregon. I see this as something you could almost franchise. I actually responded to this one. I said, we really don't know yet, but I'll do a post soon about people wanting there to be more than one. I think we need to do one successfully before we get that big. That said, we won't be patenting anything we do. Anyone wishing to emulate us will be free to follow our model. And I think that's pretty much where we're at right now. I don't have any time right now to worry about the fact that somebody wants one in Oregon, right? And if you want to do something like this in Oregon, do not wait for me. Do not wait for my people. Go nuts with it. I can't build two of these at once. And I have no interest in doing so. This is going to be, and once we do one, we'll be much more able to do a second one. We'll have a lot better understanding of all the technicalities and legalities and politics and everything else that goes along with it. But right now, I just don't care that you don't want one here. You don't want one here? Great. I do. And again, that's one of those abrupt decisions that bend some people's nose the wrong way. But if I worry about the fact that you want one in Oregon and someone I know wants to do one up in New Hampshire and I know another person wants to do one in Florida, and if I worry about those, this one never happens. So that's that cut line decision. Let's see here. Jake says, I believe the concept could be built in Tennessee as well. Me and a buddy have looked at bug out location properties and stranded gas wells on them. Wonder if there's things like that. I don't know. I was wondering how sewage would be handled. Would each individual plot put in their own septic tank? And what about water? Would everyone put it in their own cistern as well? Okay, here's the thing, and I'm going to probably get to a question later that I remember seeing where somebody's like, this thing about everybody putting septic tanks in bothers me because it takes up so much of your land and you're only getting an acre. And listen, this is where I'm going to point something out. If you're a lessee on this property, you need to do this with what everybody else does with their acre. It's not your business. It's not your problem. Okay, if you're going to have liberty and freedom, if Joe wants a septic system, Joe can put a septic system on his property should everything else work out to make that possible. Now, if the county says the way you're doing this development, you can't do that, and we have to decide we have to make the whole property off-grid, and we have to do it some weird way that maybe, and that's another thing that I'm going to say is going a long way. Whatever it takes to get this done, we're going to do. Okay? I just watched America, The Story of Us. And the people that came to Jamestown Colony at the beginning, 7 in 10 died. And those that continued to come and made it through became some of the wealthiest people in the New World. I'm not promising you financial wealth, but this abundance of community is what we can build here. And I don't expect 7 of 10 of us to die, okay? But that spirit that I'm going to do something that's never been done before, so I don't exactly well, if I'm going to go to Jamestown, Will there be a Kohl's on the corner of the street so I can buy my dresses? That's not where we're at with this, right? So the whole concept of how is going to be dependent, again, what do we find, what's the thing like? But what other people do is their own business, as long as it doesn't harm you or the community as a whole. So if some guy wants to give up, you know, a tenth of an acre for his leach field, and as long as it's put in properly and not harming anybody else, he can do that. If you want to turn around and say, I'm going to put in a composting toilet and a gray water system and not give up any space for it, and I want to do that with my property, then you can do that with your property. So I don't know is the answer to exactly how this would work out, but I'll bet you that the answer is going to be not everybody's going to do it the same way. Not everybody's going to do it the same way. Water, I think that the primary way that you're going to have water is through wells and rain catchment. I don't see, you know, we could get lucky. We could find a piece of property There could be a great big, you know, county co-op municipal water supply running right past one of the borders, and we could be in a position where, yeah, it's easy to do. I doubt it. And in most rural properties, including where I live now, and I only live about 15 miles from Fort Worth. You look like you're in the middle of nowhere, but the reality is it's like 15 miles away to downtown Fort Worth. I'm on a well. My neighbor's on a well. My other neighbor's on a well. The neighbor down the street's on a well. Everybody's on a well. And all the people that live around here that are not on a well, that are on, like county water or on city water from one of the cities, like was Lakeside's a little town down here, they have a great big water tower, and that feeds all of the 1,200 residents in Lakeside. And guess where the water in that water tower comes from? A well. So it's not like this is unprecedented or can't be done. But I think you're looking at a well for that. I think you're looking at managing your own waste. And before I go further, I'll keep going. Trent says, this looks to be a great idea. However, my thought is it sounds like you want to be very rural with this and way out. Is this going to be so far from civilization that people living in the community won't be able to drive to a nearby town or city and look for a full-time job, run to town supplies for supplies and enjoyment, or pay their expenses? Okay, first of all, it probably won't be so remote that you can't get mail service and things like that right where you're at. There's not many places in Texas without a decent little town or something like that somewhere nearby, but this won't be a place where a lot of people are going to be comfortable with commuting to a full-time job. It's just not. It really isn't. Somebody said, well, then people would have to be independently wealthy, and that's not true either. One thing I'm going to make is a critical have to be in this thing is that one way or another, we can bring high-speed internet in. You can be off-grid with the community, like the individual lots, and still do that. You can have main power brought into the community services buildings and things like that. I don't want to be off-grid with this, other than if the resident says, I want to be off-grid, then they can be off-grid. I want to bring power in, but I'm also being a realist. Maybe we can, maybe we can't. If we can't bring grid power to everybody, we can still bring grid power to the main, you know, main common areas. And that grid power can also house communications equipment. We can bring in high-speed data lines and provide free Wi-Fi internet access throughout the entire community. So as long as you have that, it opens the potential to find work where you don't have to go to the office every day. Now, can everybody do that? No, but it opens up a significant opportunity. And a lot of people that think they can't have never tried. It's also the case not everybody's going to live here full-time. I probably won't. I mean, this is going to be kind of like I want it to be within 3 hours of where I live so I can go there anytime I want and hang out for a week and run workshops and do things like that. And, well, I want one close to me. Well, build one. I mean, it just amazes me that as soon as you decide you're going to do something, somebody wants it somewhere else. Well, knock it out, man. Or, you know, it's probably going to be a three-year project where this thing is stable enough, running well enough, cash flow positive enough, stabilized, understood, and not fully developed, but the development plan over the next 10 years is clear, understood, largely agreed to, and then we say, you know what, we could do this again. We could do this again. And that's probably that long, so, you know. I'm following this very closely. This is from John, and I've been working on a very similar concept for some time. When I first heard you talking about it, I thought it was strange how similar ideas were. However, I've now come to realize there are a large number of people looking for something like this. It's not strange. It is desired. I agree. This cannot be a cookie-cutter type operation, but we can learn from each other. I have a few families already very interested. We are planning on doing this in Tennessee right now. So there you go. There's your Tennessee one. I have a 3 to 5 year plan to put this in action. Thank you for working on this. Connor says, I see financing is the biggest hurdle to people being able to build as they may want. However, seeing the success with the MT Knives launch, I'm excited about the power of this community and vision-wise. I could see someone with deep pockets realizing the potential and value in each leaseholder position to finance construction for people where many banks may be shy. Frugal Fanny says, I think people can get conventional financing with a 99-year lease. I would hope to see some unconventional building methods employed in the community as well. There'll be other questions that will basically go the same route. So can PermaEthos create its own bank? Can PermaEthos attract enough investors to finance the construction of your home, of an unconventional home from somebody with, if somebody says, deep pockets and stuff like that? Yeah, but don't plan on that right away. Just that's on the later shelf. That's on the later, you know, slash maybe .com shelf, right? That's like maybe. And you can't bet on that. But I do think that financing will be available, and financing will have a lot to do with what you're going to build, how you're going to build it, how much you're going to spend. I mean, if you're thinking, well, I'm going to get myself a little lease here, and I'm going to walk down and get an FHA loan, and I'm going to get a loan for $250,000 and build a typical suburban house, it may be almost impossible to do, even if you could do it right down the road from where you live now. This is not conventional, so it gets unconventional. And if you think you're going to do that and build yourself an earthship, it wouldn't matter if you own the land outright. Financing that gets to be difficult. The key is, can a person see this as a longer-term project? Something they're going to spend the next 5 years working on a little at a time as the community develops around it, and keep your construction costs down and do a lot of work yourself. Rely on the people that are in this community. There's going to be people there that go, well, I know how to frame. Hire me to frame instead of a contractor. I'll charge you less. I'm living here in my little place I framed out for myself. I'll frame you out something. Pay for the materials and my labor cost is X. That is internal business. That is something that Perma Ethos Inc. doesn't give a living crap about, right? There is potential for 100 different entrepreneurial ideas to be taken off in the first year, constructing each other's stuff. And then what about the situation where you're like, well, I know electrical, but I can't frame. And the framing guy's like, I can frame, but I don't know electrical. How about I frame my house first, and you run my electrical while I frame yours? Okay, if you start thinking that way, and we start thinking about how can we do earth contact structures and reduce the energy requirements and things like that, and make this actually what we're calling it, an eco-village. Now, you know me, I don't believe that we're going to save the polar bears by cutting ourselves off the grid, but I do understand sustainability from a standpoint of how it benefits the community itself, and the less we rely on the outside world, the more stable and more sustainable the community is. And here's the thing. The less we let the outside world put its hooks into Perma Ethos, the more autonomy we obtain, the more freedom we have, the less dictates come along with that. I mean, there are ways to do all of this, and we may get to a point where we say, look, if this is what you're really concerned about, we'll go out and find someone that knows how to build houses just like this, that has the capability to bring them in, phased in over time, so that you can do one piece, pay for it, do another piece, pay for it, do another piece, pay for it, and by the time you're done, have it the way you want it, and owe nothing on it, except the underlying lease fee. And it's the creative attitude that's going to take things forward. Casey says, I think finding the right property will solve so many problems. I was able to save a lot of money by positioning my house right on top of a contour line. This allowed me to have my well house upslope from me, as well as a gravity septic system. Avoiding any electrical components in the system will help lower the cost, eliminating needing to supply power to those same components. I think a great property would need to have many slopes, varying elevations. I think that's a great idea. And that's why I'm going to have people like Nick Bertner evaluating properties with me. There's a potential that we could end up creating a gravity flow water system with several wells and ponds and bring water to residents with very low energy. We only need to pump the water up once and let gravity do the rest of the work. Does that work? Can we create water that's going to be safe for use that way? Or can we say, you know what, you're on your own for drinking water, but as far as water for washing and stuff like that, unedited, guys, the dog's upset. that we can provide some level of services that way. And the answer is we don't know until we try. The key is, and I hope you're beginning to see this, this is going to be the community banding together and saying, here's a problem, let's solve it. Here's a problem, let's solve it. The problem is the conditioning of the human mind at this point is conditioned that there are already solutions to all of our problems. We just need to figure out how to make those solutions fit our problem. In other words, the solution to the problem of I need power is bring in the grid. The solution to the problem that I need water is bring in a water line from somebody else, a government. The solution that I need someplace for my poop to go is to bring in a green line to take it back out to the city. And in some instances, if that's an easy addition and it gives you a lot of control and power for your community, then you do it. But if it's adversely affecting the community, it takes longer to ramp up to comfortable full-time living conditions for those that want that, then you take the longer route, right? Again, we're creating a new society here. We really are. This is a group of people with a preparedness, sustainable, and libertarian mind coming together to do what so many have tried to do and failed, and I absolutely know we can get it done. And I know this model works for this. I'll stop at why, because I know there's other questions. I would love to get involved with, this is from Robert, with infrastructure discussions. As far as energy infrastructure goes, I can easily see the community having a gas station producing and distributing ethanol, hydrogen, methane, syngas, etc., and having a mechanic to convert cars that can run on these fuels. It doesn't have to be strictly cars either. Ever wanted your own gas company? I've been planning on it, but I admit it's a 10-year-plus plan at this point. I strongly suggest a centralized gas, syngas plant taking biomass from the community and piping a very inexpensive fuel the generators can run on. Please understand this wouldn't be piped into homes, but it could be piped into generator sheds. Any thoughts? Okay, and then Jake says, I love the idea. There's a huge wood syngas project in North Carolina where they're creating a huge amount of syngas to generate power for a local community. Couple of bobcats pushing wood chips into a huge two-story digester biofurnace. If they can do it, we could too. Also, finding a property with stranded gas oil or two would be a huge asset. Yeah, if that exists. Let me just say, that is on the probably but later shelf, right? That's just like, that is so much. Okay, now we have the people here. We have the revenue stream. We have people starting to build. We want energy. How can we do that? I love that idea. I hesitate to get too deep into things like that because here's what happens. The person that wants to become a lease holder in this property then internalizes that and says, well, we're going to do that. We don't know what we're going to do. This is an option. And I'll tell you, let me give you my view right now of how you start this. You start this with, there's your piece of property, here's the common areas. For right now, the corporation is focused on the common areas because it will give an asset to everybody that's here while they're here visiting or living here, and it will create an additional revenue flow that we can do all these other things with. So there's your piece of dirt, right? As far as, well, what kind of road and infrastructure, there's a dirt path up there you can get a car in. We're going to have to do at least that, right? And eventually we want to have at least gravel roads put in for this type of thing and all, but we lay it out, we make sure people can just access their land with a vehicle. You bring in something like a tough shed or an RV or something like that, you get yourself a little Honda generator, a quiet one, you know, a little 2K, and then you can survive. And you can be relatively comfortable with just that. And you're looking at an investment somewhere of $5,000 to $10,000. And if you had to and you're okay with debt, you could throw that on a credit card for all I care. I don't like credit cards, but I'm just saying. There's financing's available to do that. And that would be, $10K would be a pretty nice setup. Or you go in and you build your own thing. You know, you go, I mean, I even said in one of my other posts, you know, I lived in a GP medium tent. Great big heavy canvas U.S. military tent. I'm sure they're available on the surplus market. I lived in one of those with 8 people. We had a plywood floor and one of those tents over top of it. And when you say, well, it's too hot, I lived in it in Honduras. And it was actually decently comfortable to sleep in, believe it or not. Now, on days where you could sleep in, like Sundays when we didn't work, you didn't sleep in because once that sun got up on there, it wasn't so comfortable anymore. But it's amazing what you adapt to and take as normal if you really want something. Now, that's not a permanent solution. But for the person that says, oh, I want to stay here for 2 months out of the year and build my home and then go back to the world for 10 months out of the year, and I want to do that, and by the time I'm 5 years down the road, I want my home ready to move into. That's one way, one cheap, easy, simple way. And when you're done, you still have a plywood platform that you can build something else on. You know? I mean, so you got to start thinking more about these creative solutions. How do you get it started? Once you get started, you'll figure out how to make it work. Exciting and daunting from Doc Torque. Okay. Exciting and daunting. How would the community interact with the local town government? As little as possible. Let me answer that one. I would love to see a libertarian voting block move into an area and influence things in a positive way. Yeah, if you want to vote, you vote. You're talking about a few hundred people. I'm not trying to do a free state project here, guys. Would everything on the property need to be inspected by locals? I don't know. Depends. Probably not. That's why I want an unincorporated area. Keeping things up to code. unincorporated areas in Texas have very little code enforcement, almost none. About the only time that they get involved at all is when you want to put in a septic system or you want to bring grid power in. That's it. And then inside the structure, it's not even really code enforced either. You know, I have GFI breakers in my home because I want them, not because the county says I have to. Just to give you kind of an understanding about that. Could the community influence the codes or allow more freedom? No, we're not going there to change codes. We're going there to avoid codes. All right? So that's kind of just like out in the... sounds like it might be wise for the community to become its own town. Probably not. Probably not. A town is a government. A town has certain structures to its government. A town is subject to things under county that just a bunch of people living out in the middle of nowhere are not. I think the town model, right, to actually incorporate as a town is what you would call the nuclear card. That the corporation should put aside some funding and figure out what would it take and cost to do this. And if we ever become under attack of annexation, then you play the nuclear card and say, no, we're not doing that. We're going to incorporate as our own town. But if we structure the location properly in the first place, it shouldn't be a problem. Maybe it'll be a problem for our kids or our grandkids. Hey, I see 25 to 50 years of being left alone mostly. That's the goal anyway. But I think becoming a town carries with it certain obligations that just being a community doesn't. And folks, we're not going there for more government. We're going there for less government, at least inside the boundaries of our little piece of private property, which is what it is. So you can just go away and leave us alone and don't tell us how to run our lives. That's the attitude here. A town thereby automatically becomes open to other people. It's no longer private property. It's public property. So you might own your little piece, but then the infrastructure through the town, right? So all other kinds of stuff happen. Well, I'm not interested in that. I used to work for an volunteer organization. When I came up with an ambitious idea, my boss would say, that's a great idea, you're on it. Different ways of looking at a problem may spark tremendous innovation. I think the idea of developing self-reliant communities is open source, and the more groups we have trying this, the better, so we can collaborate and learn together. Absolutely. I mean, I don't plan on keeping anything behind closed doors as to the how and the what we're doing, right? But I do plan on keeping the rights inside the property lines. I have a suggestion that I think could improve the long-term outlook of this community. Instead of 100 acres of community property, I would suggest at least 150. That 50 extra acres would be used as grazing field, rotational grazing of community and animals, just an idea. Well, it was never 100 acres. It was never 100 acres. It was never 100 acres. And I'm going to answer this one thing that keeps coming back right here, right now. People are saying, well, why don't you get 600 acres? Why don't you get 800 acres? Why don't you get 1,000? Do 20 of them. Stop. Right? Okay, it's easy to say that when you're not the one stepping up to make it happen, and you're not the one putting the money in to make it happen. This is the reality. We'll screen potential investors. We'll select potential investors. We'll make a case to those potential investors of how we will safeguard their investment and what the goals and agendas are and what type of land we all agree that we're going to purchase. Then we'll look at the money that that represents. And we'll say we have X dollars. Now, we can't go spend exactly X dollars on property. There are some initial development concerns the property will have. So we'll say this is how much we're going to allocate to initially do things like put some trails and roads in, throw some ponds in so there's some surface water, mark out and survey the lots, make sure there's access to the lots, and be able to say on this day, you know, this many days after we close on the land, we should be able to open the doors and start taking leaseholders into the property. And we're going to be sitting on all the obligations and expenses of that property until the first leaseholder shows up, buys in, and we say, here's your place. Because I won't take your money until I can say, there's your lot. All right? So that could be 3 or 4 months of us paying property taxes, insurance, and everything, in addition to making the improvements and not yet generating a dollar of capital. So how much land will we buy? It depends on what's available, what's best, and how much money there is. Now, my target is in the 200-acre range. Maybe more. Maybe up to 300 acres. But if I find a perfect piece of land, all the numbers work, and we say, but on this piece of land, we can only take 75 people as lessees. But this is the right decision for us to make. Done. Done. But that's not fair. I don't even, if that's the words you're going to use to answer that, this is not where you need to be. Because you're going to be the person that's also going, but what's he doing over there? And that's the other thing. Again, I'm going to come back to it. What someone does on their piece of land, if it doesn't hurt you, you don't get to say anything about it. Which means what you do on your piece of property, if it doesn't hurt anybody, no one else gets to say anything about it. This is called liberty. But we're going to pick the size of the property and take the number of people in as permanent leaseholders based on the budget, the goals of the community, the planned initial infrastructure, and the capital available. Excel never lies. Now, somebody emailed me about how Excel never lies, but it's important for the numbers that you put in, and he argues with people that work all the time. I know how to do this. I know how to financially analyze a potential business. The real estate components that I don't understand, I will bring expertise to the table to cover that. So we will put the right inputs in. That means we'll get the right outputs out, and the numbers will tell us what to do. And initially, in like the first year of developing the community, that will continue to be the case. We'll have to take a look at everything that we're going to do in the first 12 months and say, what are all the things we do to make this environment as stable as possible for people that want to stay here for more than a day? And that all comes first. That comes first before a gun range. That comes, I mean, you know, the truth is a place like this, you'll probably be able to pick a place to go shoot. But there's people talking about having, you know, a gun range and doing firearms training and all. On the later shelf, not even the maybe shelf with that one. That's just on the later shelf, okay? What would be the plan for roads and access to leased plots? I'm assuming dirt roads to begin with as the community develops, paved to follow. Once land is found, I'd be very interested in seeing some kind of master plan of the layout of the community. I know that's a long way off. Might be worth it to have some kind of a professional planner take a look at the layout. That's almost under the heading of give me some credit. I mean, really? Of course they're going to plan out the community. I will say that it probably will not have paved roads internally. That's a lot of cost and a lot of infrastructure, and we can build things without doing that that will be much more environmentally friendly than a bunch of tar and pavement and stink and hardball runoff and things like that. There may be some places where you look and go, that strip right there is very subject to erosion. And we should, you know, maybe we should pave that little piece. Or we'll do so much grading and regrading of that piece. That piece, we may want to lay down some hardball. But most of the internals will be dirt. And eventually packed gravel, I see is that. But again, that's, I don't know, we'll see when we find a piece of property how it works. And what does everybody want? How much money is there? How much money is there not just from lessees, but from the third-party revenue sources like temporary leasers, workshops, any type of commerce the community does? How is there a plan to accommodate its shops selling the goods? I can envision a place like one day having its own bank, bakery, and stuff like that. Later shelf, definitely the common areas will be developed into some level of commerce. And the commerce will be both internal and external. And again, these are one of those things where you have to run the numbers and see what the numbers tell you. But my goal would be to make internal commerce at cost and external commerce at profit. So if you had a little coffee shop that served coffee and stuff that was made by the community and stuff like that where people came to hang out, that a resident, a permanent resident, not a temporary resident, would come in and they would have, first of all, you probably wouldn't need ID by this point. Everybody would know you. But a resident would pay less for a cup of coffee than an outsider. Why? You're making an investment in the community. It's your community, right? So it'd be a cost. It would be a cost-plus model. So cost to residents, cost-plus to people that are not permanent leaseholders. Membership has its privileges, right? But having its own bank, you're way, way, way down the road with that. I mean, I doubt it. Now the Federal Trade Commission wants to come in and look at what you're doing. You're running a bank. How about this? How about an internal barter economy running on its own community currency, and all external things are done with the exchange mechanism, i.e. dollars, of the people outside? You could have a LET system. You could have a silver-based currency. You could have a Bitcoin-based currency. That's up to the community to decide. In fact, I say, let's have it all. Let's do whatever you and Joe want to exchange value for value on. If you and Joe want to do barter of labor, do it. I don't care, and I'm not going to be writing it down on a form so you guys can have to pay the IRS. It's your business. Right? You do it the way you want to do it. If you want something done and Joe wants silver dimes for it, give him dimes. If he wants AOCS currency, give him that. If he wants bitcoins, give him that. Freedom. But banking, no. No heavily regulated things inside PermaEthos, either the company or the community. If it's heavily regulated, it attracts people that they say are there to help you that are only there to get in your way and hinder you. What I've always said about trying to solve problems is that the first problem you'll run into when you try to solve a big problem is money. And most of the time, if you're creative, as we're already showing here, you can solve the money problem. The next problem you run into is government. And it's something that's very hard for young people generally to understand. They come out of college, they have all these great ideals, they're going to save the world, the corporatocracy sucks, but I've got my iPhone, and I'm going to march in Wall Street Occupy movements, and then they decide I'm going to actually do something, and they button down, and they realize, man, this is a big problem, it's going to take a lot of money. So then they find a source of funding through a private charity or a public entity or whatever, and they start to implement a solution, and some bureaucrat shows up and goes, you can't do that. So the last thing I want is anything that you would call bureaucrat bait. A bank would be bureaucrat bait. Now, could I see setting up a pool of investors to create a financing entity that would loan money to people to do project construction on their land because it's unconventional and make a good rate of return but not a usurious rate of return? Yes, and that would be its own company, and it would not be related to PermaEthos in any way except it would exist to serve our customers. So it would be like Creative Financing Inc. And they would loan Tom money to build his Earthship with a schedule of repayment, right? But that's later, on the later shelf, all right? I know you said there will be community spaces for kitchens and such, but what about setting aside for a state-registered farmer's market? No state-registered anything. No state registrations. Oh, no. I know a lot less investment from the government is preferred. I mentioned a farmer's market because a registered farmer's market, at least there are other states that exemptions for certain food safety liability. So if we wanted to sell through a farmer's market, okay, and we wanted to market our stuff through there, and there wasn't a good farmer's market existing there, then the smart thing to do would be for the company to do a cost analysis and say, does this make us money? And get a piece of property that's not inside PermaEthos and set it up as its own entity. You know, the Mid-Texas Farmers Market or what have you. No. Government registration is bad. Always bad. Would we might find that that's, here's where I say, understand, sitting down in a board of directors meeting and having somebody just trash your idea like I just did. Is there a possibility that we might do further research on that and determine that actually it's not a problem, it's a great idea, we could confine it into our common areas and control the public access to it and bring in other people from outside of our own community and let them have space? And so, yes. What does my gut say? Probably not. What about paving the road with wood chips? Why put pavement? I don't know. We'll figure it out when we get there. I think there will be an initial master plan. I would love for Jeff Lawton to help plan and film the progress of the land. Don't bet on it. However, the master plan may be tweaked as we go based on constraints and opportunities. Depend on it. It will absolutely be tweaked. In addition, there is no way common areas are going to be fully developed before all the leaseholders occupy the land. This is going to be a process that takes time and efforts as part of decision-making process to determine what needs most. Absolutely. If we are too unreal about our wish list promises up front, then we will all price ourselves right out of the possibility of engaging in a lease. Absolutely. I think that going into the planning, there should be a ratio of 50-50, 50% of the land leased and 50% of the land in the common area. Sorry, dude, we get to decide that. And that's probably not the case. You're probably looking at setting aside about a 30% common area system. That's based on my analysis, and it may be 20%, depending on how big the area is. If I can swing a 500-acre property, it makes no sense to set aside 250 is pure common area. That size piece of land, though, starts to open up some creative opportunities. Maybe you take 200 lessees, right? Maybe you set up, then you have, 300 acres left? Maybe you set aside 100 acres of common area that's only accessible to leaseholders, And then all the other common areas more for the public storefront side of things, where exercises and trainings and commerce and stuff like that happens. Because, I mean, that changes a lot of things depending on how much we get. But I also think that the more common area we set up, the less number of people we can bring into the community. And people are a strength in this up to kind of a point. I think that if you get into something much bigger than about 400 people, you start to lose the cohesion that comes with that small town feel. I also like the idea of having pasture or paddocks for livestock. Yeah, that would be part of the common area. Here may be another option. We could set up a ranch in Southwest Texas where the land is super cheap. No, that sucks. I just use mob grazing. This is going to be hard enough. We don't need to run into the desert. I'm going to skip the rest of that one. I agree the key to this community is going to be neighbors helping neighbors. I imagine 100 hardworking libertarians raising any type of house with today's technology. A day is about all you would need to get the exterior done. That might be a little optimistic, but maybe not. The reason why this vision is so appealing to us is that everyone will have the same hardworking attitude. Don't bet on it. Most people will have the same hardworking attitude. We will get some of what my wife and I privately call Ednas. There's always some Ednas. I won't explain that, but just understand Ednas are the ones that don't pull their weight. Again, this is the attitude you have to have. The Ednas that don't pull their weight don't concern you. You don't worry. Well, if he got a chicken and he didn't do, I don't care. I don't care. The Edna, as long as the Edna pays the Edna's $200 or $250 or whatever it is in lease fees, the minimum level of return of surplus in product or service back to the leaseholders goes there, and the additional return that's earned by participation, which is both direct from the company, so the company runs a certain concern and you come in and work on it, and that goes away, and your lease payment goes away that month, or you actually make a profit. That's one way. But the other way is, and this is where you got to have faith in the community. The Edna, when the Edna needs a house built, how many people are going to show up and do it? But the hardworking Joe, who's always helping everybody else when he needs something, guess what's going to happen? This is how society ran before government screwed it up. So any solution that sounds like government, you need to put on the never shelf. A day is about all you would need. The reason why the vision, it'd be a lot easier to keep good bloodlines, as most everyone will have animals as well. Where one is weak, the other will be strong. I hope we get our chance to raise our four kids in such a place. I hope you do too. You sound like you've got your mind in the right place. Jake says, also think about the power of economic scale as in buying materials. Let's say we ran a how-to seminar on a DIY aquaculture system. We find out that 62 leasers out of 100 want one on their own plot. We go and buy bulk IBC totes, 55-gallon barrels, etc., to get the low ball rate. Maybe the same for 1,500-gallon water storage tanks for water we capture. I can see mapping out many of these projects, and each month the lessees enjoy the economic scale of purchasing to improve their parcels. I think that's a great idea. I think that's a great idea, and then you're still going to get the people who go, but I can't afford it this month. Sorry, everybody can't wait for you to be able to afford it. And again, that's one of those hard and fast decisions that have to be made based on numbers. We have friends who live in Sun City Retirement Community, Georgetown, Texas. That is planning on roids with an HOA-style government, but holy cow, the place is dialed in. The idea of having a collaborative, libertarian-ish, mind-your-own-business type of settlement is hard to fathom in today's world. Count me in. With the rules mostly being like a Bill of Rights, what the government and your neighbors can't do to you. Absolutely. That's the goal here. I'm going to talk about conflict resolution. This will be the contract that a resident will have to sign, and it'll get ferreted out maybe a little better, and maybe even one more layer of arbitration put into it, but this is the way I see it working. You and Joe have a problem about something. So Joe does something, and you say, I don't like that. He does something on his land, and you just don't like the way it looks or sounds or whatever. Well, it's not just shut up and go away, okay? The first thing that you're required to do is you and Joe are required to sit down, have a beer or a cup of coffee, and be men, and not call each other names and not be a bunch of jackasses, okay? And then to sit down and to both of you explain to the other why you think that it's okay to do what's, or you don't think it's okay. And then both of you are supposed to say to yourself, is there a way that we can think of where we can both get what we want? Right? This is going to be in the contract that you have to do this. You have to spend time. You have to legitimately discuss your beef with your neighbor first. After you're done, you both go away for 48 hours and think about it. and then you come back and see if you have a solution. If you can't come up with a solution, then you and Joe are to go find a third party who doesn't care, an arbitrator, a voluntary member of the community that will listen to you and Joe plead your case. That arbitrator will listen. They will think about what you've told them. They will tell you to go away. 24 hours later, you will come back to the arbitrator. This is a nobody has to be one if they don't want to be. I would think there's people willing to do this because it's our community. Nobody does it for you, okay? So you'd come back to me if I was your arbitrator, and I would say, I've listened to you, I've listened to Joe. This is the most workable solution I think that we can come to that would respect both of you and your desires, needs, and wants. Here's my recommendation. I'm handing it to you. Now, this is a non-binding resolution. There's no government. You are not required to follow the resolution. Okay? Now, you and Joe either can accept it immediately, or you can go away, and you have to consider the offer for at least 48 hours. You and Joe then don't bother the arbitrator anymore. He's done his job or her job. Okay? You get back together in 48 hours and discuss whether or not it'll work out, and you can make any changes to it that both of you agree would work. And hopefully at that point, you've worked it out like adults and sorted out your problem. If you can't sort it out, then you will come before the Board of Ownership, who will probably tell you to both shut up and go away and leave each other alone, assuming that what both of you are doing doesn't violate the concept of not harming your neighbor. I don't like the way his bushes look. I'm done. You guys couldn't work this out between the two of you and an arbitrator. You know what? Nothing changes. Go away. Or if there's a legitimate problem and somebody's legitimately creating a problem, as long as the contract that the lessee has signed is in violation, in other words, you're doing something that legitimately is harming the property of your neighbor. The problem is that Joe has decided to work on cars, and Joe is draining oil from old cars, and the oil is running down into your property. Then we'll say, no more. Not you can't do cars. You must put something in place to prevent that from happening. And if you do, if you don't, you're in violation of your lease agreement, period. The end, and you're subject to having your lease withdrawn. Because now you're actually harming somebody else. But if you just don't like it because Joe has an ugly car, I'm sorry, this ain't the suburbs. That's conflict resolution. And again, it might even have another layer of arbitration. So your first arbitrator failed, you're required to find another one. And you know what? That sounds like a pain in the ass. Solving problems is a pain in the ass. Maybe, if that's the system, maybe a lot of problems will never go that far. Because as soon as you walk over to Joe and say, Joe, dude, I'm worried about this. Well, what? You're doing this car thing, and I think the oil's... Well, let me show you what I'm doing. You go, oh, okay. Well, you know what? Could you do this for me? You're storing it in those barrels. Could you do something to make sure that if one of those barrels fails, that it doesn't leach into the land? Joe's probably already wanting to do that. And if Joe goes, well, yeah, but I'm not sure how. Let's go find some people and figure that out. And that's what happens when you can't make a phone call and bitch. And making a phone call and bitching will be highly discouraged. That's how I see this working. Here's another example of creative thinking. One of the participants at Jack's first workshop was a fellow in West Tennessee who bought a cabin out in the woods with no power. At first, he planned on getting local electric company to run power to his new abode. They priced it around $20,000 to put in new poles and new power lines. He gulped. Then he went about designing a solar-powered off-grid system. He now has a full system, provides all the power he needs except for running his clothes dryer. His wife totes them to town on those winter months where he can't line dry. That would be like 1 month out of the year here, by the way, guys. His all-in cost for a turnkey system, $8,000. Of course, he was smart about how and what he powered. Your lifestyle probably won't be like your modern grid-tied subdivision home, but it's still very possible. And again, if many of the leasers band together to buy components in bulk, I might get that cost down to a sub-$5,000 or better. Let's think about how we could add to this with so much more power than this person here. Let's say you want to be off-grid. Why can't in the common areas there be a laundromat? Why in the common areas can't we have a laundromat? And then how much easier is that, because that energy can be grid energy, because getting grid energy to a, like one main compound would be not that hard to do. And then when you need to use that facility, it's right there. We'll have to leave my house. Yeah, and maybe you'll talk to somebody else that lives there. I don't want to do that. Then that's fine. You sort your own problem. But would it be an advantage to having something like that? And wouldn't that be great for people that come there to temporarily lease a small structure in the common area, the temporary lessee, that becomes a major revenue stream? Because you know what that person's going to pay a month for a little 10 by 10 cabin, right? That person's going to pay like $1,200 a month. And where does that money go? Straight into the community. Straight into the community for all these other provisions. And Xavier tells me that's his main revenue, is those temporary people. They want to come there and do yoga and contemplate their life. There's people now that are kind of like jet setters. They're like the new wealthy, but they live like they're not. You know, the Tim Ferriss bunch that travel all over the world. And they just want a place to like crash for like 2 months. And they want to experience like what's life like at an eco-village run by libertarians in Texas. Some of those people we can have pretty nice facilities for, and we can get a lot of money for that. You know, as long as they have internet connection, they can run their little internet business or whatever. There's tons of people like this, folks. They become a customer. But what if they don't want to do... I don't care what they want to do. As long as they don't break any rules, as long as they stay out of the private areas, as long as they don't damage anything, and they're just there as a tenant, I don't care what they want. Other than I want to make sure they're happy. It's a business decision again. Another one are, am I planning opening a design document for concerns to the community? You might consider putting this document in the GitHub. I'm just, you're getting into details, right? Of course. Of course. See, before anybody says, here's my money, I want to be a leaseholder, the whole property would have been found, purchased, presented. You would know you're going to get this lot. Here's what it looks like. What's the master plan? We don't. No, that's not going to be the case. Like, because if I give you a true master plan, I'm basically saying we will have all this done by this period of time. Basically, a vision plan will be laid out. This is what we want to do. This is what we're doing in the next 3 to 4 months, subject to getting this many people in. But see, here's the thing. I think we can bank on the cash flow. I think the interest in this is unbelievable. On a completely different topic, I'm guessing a gun range would be a welcome addition to long-term plans. Yep. And then somebody asked about open carry, and I said only property owners can open carry handguns in Texas. A lessee or renter can't. That is law, not my policy. Open carry of long guns is legal in Texas. Person says learning something new every day, and then somebody came in and says the law states that you can open carry on property you own or property that is in your control. The 1 acre tract that is leased would be under that person's control. They could open carry there. I don't see a problem with that, as long as the law says that. And then, see, Texas has like this, you know, what is open carry? Well, if you're at a gun range or you're hunting or you're target shooting, it's not open carry. It's using your weapon in a place where the discharge is allowed. Walking around with it on your hip day to day, there is no open carry in Texas. If I could change that, I would. I would say if you want to carry inside the community, you're going to carry a long gun, or you're going to carry concealed with a permit. Let me address a completely different thing that has been coming up here and there over and over again with folks about like libertarian stance on things like marijuana. What is my libertarian stance on marijuana? It's pointless as a law that it's illegal. I don't smoke marijuana. I don't want you to either, but I don't want a law that says you can't. But, no, you won't be growing pot in your house in this community. Certainly not if anybody knows that that's what you're doing. I mean, no one's going to come inside your house and inspect it, right? So it's the same thing that anybody would do anywhere. You're not supposed to be doing that anywhere, so whatever. It doesn't matter what I think. It matters what the law is. And the community cannot sanction or turn a blind eye to any truly illegal activities. So if you're running a moonshine still in your backyard, that's got to stop, right? Because you put the whole concern at risk. You put the whole permit ethos at risk through that illegal activity. Not because I don't like it, but because the man doesn't like it. So we have to be legal. read my mind about the gun range, took a carry permit course, bulldozed a few. So, yeah, the gun range thing eventually will happen. How that relates to, like, can we make money with people training there, that goes into an insurance issue, and it's basically a when. When do we have the cash flow, and can we bank on a return of investment? Because I see a gun range at this place is mostly being a place that people that are residents can go shoot. I mean, that's really what I think we're looking at there. I don't see it really being, a place people go to take huge courses and turning it into, like, you know, Front Sight Junior or something like that. But, you know, you never know. You see how things happen. Depending on the initial response rate to leases, the funds should be available to cut in basic services like water and main power grid. As a matter of fact, I would think a county would require a minimum level of services to be part of the approval process for development. Probably not, because they probably don't get to say whether we do it or not. They probably only get to say that we can do certain things if we ask them for certain things. So in other words, if we decided we wanted to do this right now, and we went out and said, you know what, we're just going to be off-grid, and we're not going to talk to the county, and we're not going to get water from the county. We're going to do everything ourselves. This is just our piece of land, and we're just doing this in Texas, in an unincorporated area, until you try to put in a septic tank. There is literally nothing that they get to say about what you do as long as you're not violating law. Code means nothing. Nothing. Now, does that change because we're leasing you the land? It might. There might be things we're required to do. We'll see. Whatever comes, we'll handle it. Then Aaron says, I like the idea of being as independent as possible from the current infrastructure such that we free people want to be free from bureaucrats and corporations that are the primary decision makers. So basically he's saying it would make sense if we did as much as we could with our own resources. I agree, but that may not always work out. They don't supply water or to sewage. I am sure that septic systems and self-provisioning water by the community would be fine. They would. A county will require some plan for water resource for firefighting and a basic level of sanitation to be met. Permit Ethos Corp will have to meet these basic level of services. That's probably true. As the envisioned growth occurs, about 100 acres over 300 acres, plus 10 or so business operations, the basic infrastructure will be critical to the cost of the project. Don't set numbers for me, man, because we don't know what the numbers are. Great point about fire suppression. We're going to be able to handle that. Would it be possible to treat our own water? Yes. What you do with your water is your business. Have you found a company that would be willing to insure the corporation? My response to this entire thing I won't read, but just my response to it was, some of you are deep in the weeds while we are still above the ground level. You can always insure anything. You can't go to a company and say, will you insure something before you know what they're insuring, how much and for how long and for what. So that's just not an issue right now. Another thought, I agree, is one requirement is the land be in an unincorporated area of a county. Other considerations, though, is that it need to be close enough to a city that the commute will be reasonable. Most of the residents are not going to be working on the property, and in order to maintain stability, they need to have access to jobs. Depends on what you mean by jobs. This is probably not going to be real close to Houston or Austin or Dallas, right, or something of that size. Possibly Tyler or Palestine, somewhere out there. There's a lot of affordable land. This is subject to what we can afford, and I don't see it being someplace that's, like, absolutely in the middle of nowhere. I just don't. On your concern of financing of construction, I do not think it's a problem. What I like about the lease options, I'm not in debt per se. I also have the freedom to put camping trailer on the property and then build as I want to. No court enforcement, and I am golden. Rocket stove mass heater is not something that is easily to put into a house with insurance. No financing on a compost toilet house. So a person building an appropriate house will be anything from an earth sheltered home yurt, shipping containers, or camping trailers. But in the end, the freedom to build as one sees fit leaves things ultimately cheaper to start with. You know, one way we could really do this is to create a community that would work along the lines of, it's almost like a trailer park, and not necessarily a trailer park for trailers, but that's how it would work. That lots would come with a certain level of infrastructure. You lease the lot, just happens to be a 99-year permanent lease, and anything that's put on there doesn't ever become a conventional site-built grid-tied home. That there's a standalone services, and that solves a lot of problems too. Again, I'm having to get some attorneys involved in this and stuff. I'm very much in the pre-planning stage right now. I'm lining out investors and participators based on a pretty clear vision of what you're going to get. The ideas from 50 machines to rebuild society would come in handy. I think that's a great idea, Jake, but I'm not there right now. You guys can do that if you want to, look into what they have. I hope I don't come across in this note as condescending or critical of the idea, because I think this is exactly the sort of experiment that will preserve freedom and community from encroaching on the state, the encroachment of the state. I think we'd be wise to carefully study proprietary colonies of colonial America. They dealt with a lot of the same logistical problems that permanent ethos would need to, i.e. the relationship of lessors to proprietary government. Dispute resolution and arbitration. I'm not looking to the colonies. I don't care what the colonies did, because the colonies were creating governments. The colonies were run with a religious theocracy. There could be nothing further from what we're doing than that. This is a contract among men to exchange value of equal value. That's what this is, with a clear understanding by everybody what's happened. I thought I was done, but across my mind is suggesting organize as a cooperative instead of a traditional C corp, much more in keeping with my proposed Jack's proposed business structure, and simplifies the tax burden of the corporation, of the permanent ethos. We will not do a co-op. A co-op instead of it basically makes the members of the co-op owners. Okay, this is a business. It'll make a profit. We'll pay the taxes on the profit. If we want to divest the profit, we'll put it back into the company and spend it as an expense. The idea to get rid of the profit model is foolish. Again, as soon as you start doing things that go anywhere toward the nonprofit world, you start to become subject to additional scrutiny. In a co-op, you come into some additional scrutinies. Co-ops are fine. The feasibility is that a group of people living here might create their own co-op by their own agreement to do something, whether it's to acquire feed for chickens or I don't know. It's up to them. But I would say that mostly with small numbers of people, you're not trying to do things as a town or all. You just do things on a handshake. And when somebody doesn't pull their weight, they're out. I mean, here's an interesting question. This is exactly why. And I don't want whoever posted this to take this the wrong way. But questions like this are exactly why the number of investors needs to be limited and restricted to people with a business mind. How would the corporation gain by investing in buildings to store items that sell for cost? If the investors want to give up land for a building to be put in a place so the lessees can make bulk purchases and store items, couldn't the lessees form a separate co-op to finance the building of bulk purchases? See, that's where you're wrong. That's where, like, no, there's no, like, even if they want their own co-op, that's fine. We'll still give you a building. What does an investor gain by investing? First of all, the investor's not giving up land, right? The land is the corporation's land. It belongs to permanent ethos, right? The corporation exists to serve its customers. The primary customer of permanent ethos is the permanent lessee, the permanent leaseholder, the 99-year leaseholder. Everybody else is second to the permanent leaseholder. Everything is done to serve that customer. This is a very difficult thing for people to grasp because they're so into how the government works. The government exists to serve its own agenda. Companies exist to serve customers. Companies exist to serve customers. And if a company doesn't serve its customers well, its customers go away. And the company folds. So the main thing that I would invest in a building for that might be used as a storage locker for things so people could do bulk purchases is to serve my customer. The next thing is it's conceivable that that building might have multiple functions. And then some of those multiple functions might include our external revenue generating activities. If it can store bulk purchases, it can also store bulk items for our store that sells. See? So this is where you're worried about things that don't really matter. Really, you are when you start getting into that, you know. You're worried that, like, well, and I think this is what people have to do. You have to stop worrying about what the catch is. There's no catch. There's no tricks. No sleight of hand. No look over here while I pull the quarter out of the other guy's ear. Everything transparent going in. If it came down to it, an artificial marshland could be installed as the economy of scale thing, and then everyone sends their black water to the central treatment of the gray water. It's like, again, we're down in the weeds. They're down in the weeds. You got to find the property, the layout, the structure, the infrastructure defined, the agendas, the goals, the budget first. Will the Perma Ethos Corporation be the one to install the infrastructure? Oh, God. Depends. What infrastructure? Refer to roads throughout the property, perimeter fencing, bridges, county water and electricity available at the property boundaries. See, again, we don't know yet. We don't know yet. We don't know what's going to be what yet. It might be that we look at it, and the county looks at it and says, you know what? Any one of those people that wants power can just request it from us, and we'll install it. Okay. Done. What infrastructure am I going to put in at that point if the county wants $500 to install a power pole for you? None. You're on your own. It's easy. It's simple. Much better that way. Fine. You know, if the county might say, you know, the only way we're going to do this is we'll bring power so far, but there has to be an infrastructure in place to each lot so that we can turn power on to anybody that wants it for just a switch on fee. Okay. Then we got to look at it and go, what's it going to cost? How important is that? We'll survey the people that have already put their hand up and say, I'm in. You know, if I've got 25 people that are like, I don't care how this works, I'm showing up and I'm going to make it work. And those 25 people are like, the day you open the door, I don't care if it's in the center of Jabip, I don't care if I have to live in a tent, I'm going to do this, then that decision will largely be influenced by their wants. Because this is going to be a duocracy, folks. When people say, well, who's going to decide this? And who's, in general, the people that will decide will be the people that do shit. When five people are trying to figure out what color you're going to paint the interior of a dining hall and arguing over it, and three people pick up some paint and go paint it, they decide it. Duocracy. Duocracies are awesome, right? Life is a duocracy. We've been tricked into believing that it's not. And that's why so many of our young people are falling behind. I aim to end that shit. I can't end it everywhere, but I can end it in this one place. What are some pros and cons of being a lessee versus an investor? About how much capital do you think one would need to live there for the first year? I don't know. What do you want? Given there might not be a lot of revenue yet, what would life look like for the first few years for the average lessee? We have a 7-month-old and plan to have more children. Have you seen interest from others wanting to raise families here? Yes, I have. I think this is a very interesting idea and would obviously like to know more. Keep up the great work. Okay, this is the thing. Life in the beginning, it's going to be hard. That's hard. Unless you have enough money to solve your problems. I mean, that's really all I can say. Life will be somewhat hard for the first couple of years. It will take time to build all of this up. It will take finding people willing to live hard and not worry about the fact that later someone will live easy because they lived hard first. There's people that got in the covered wagons and went west. And they went out and they built a town in the middle of nowhere. And they created an entire new something. And when people showed up later, they weren't like, oh, go away. They were like, welcome. Because they knew that there was power in there. And they knew it took a special kind of person to do that first pioneering activity. But let me break some numbers down for you. If we have, if the numbers work, and I don't know that they do, but let's just say they work. If we have 100 leases and we sell them as cheap as $1,200, and I'm not saying we can, I'm saying that's just, off the top of my head, wouldn't it be great if we could? Maybe it's $2,000, but even if it's $1,200, it's $120,000 right away that comes in. Now, I think we can take the investors and say the investors are going to recoup their investment from the lease payments, not from the lease buy-in. That lease buy-in goes right alongside the money we've allocated for community improvements. I see the investors as maybe we have to scale back our property so we can allocate maybe $100,000 in property improvement. Now we got $220,000. Now, does that let us go put a septic tank in for 100 people and you know all this other stuff? No, and we're not going to ever put a septic tank in for everybody. Okay, but what does it allow us to get a community member with a backhoe and an excavator that knows how to run that stuff working and start putting dams and ponds in right away and putting dirt roads in so that everybody can at least get to where they're going? Does that get us a professional planner like Nick Burton compensated sufficiently that he'll lay out a master plan for the community and help us solve many of these problems? Does that put in a couple buildings with some hard structure, bring at least power to those and water to those so that even if you're living in a little off-grid cabin, that you can come down and wash your clothes and get some water and haul it up to your place? And that does all of that. Okay, then what happens? You got 100 people. Let's say it's as low as $200. Let's say we can do it. That's $20,000. That's $20,000. You're probably looking at the investors pulling out about $5,000 of that to start their repayment every month. Okay, and that's not a lot for the investors, folks. It's really not. But that's $15,000 a month. And I think we can sell 100 and bring in 100 stable people that can make their payments like that. That's $15,000 in improvements a month. Okay? So that's 150 plus another 30, 180K in improvements in the first year. And it's another 180K in improvements in the second year. I think we can really quick then move toward a situation where we can set up a camping area for general public, put in a few structures for short-term people that want to come there and lease a place, you know, with all the amenities for $800 a month. And let me tell you what's going to happen. There are going to be people that have a permanent lease that are building their house that will come in and say, I'll pay the same rate an outsider would to lease that property. And that property is not going to come at a discount because it's a revenue generator for the development. But there are people that say, I can afford it, and that'll be great. I can come down here and sleep at night, and I can have all my stuff down here while I build my house. I'm going to lease that thing for six months. By the time I know that 6 months, I'm going to vacate that. Somebody else can lease it. I'm going to go up and live in my new place. And they might somewhere along the way go, you know what, I'm done with it. Fine. That's not going to be the heavy commitment from an internal member. So I mean, these are the ways we can develop. I mean, there's always solutions where there's determination, the right attitude, and money. This brings all of them together. And I hope that people are starting to see that vision and how much we can do. I see a lot of comments here about how I want in so I can be part of the solution. I don't have the capital invest, but we would be able to lease. I would want the least 3 plots if possible so I can gift 2 to my sons. This is a great idea. I don't know that we would allow that at first. I don't know. And how old are your sons? You know, are these people that would be there and active now? I actually think we need as many people involved as we can. I think we might limit this to 2. We might limit it to 1 lot at first. I want maximum participation. I also want to diversify risk for everybody. If somebody leases 10 lots, right, and they can't make their payment this month, right, that's $2,000. That's 20% of the revenue. Gone. Plus, that's 9 lots that can't be allocated to other community members. If one community member can't make their payment this month, I bet you other people will help them out as long as they're trying. And if they can't, and we have to say, you know what, we're going to maybe require you to come do some work to pay it off and stay par, most people will be able to figure out how to do that, and we're out $200. What if everybody starts doing that? We'll deal with that when it comes. We'll deal with that when it comes. But, you know, as far as the advantage of being a lessee versus an investor, this is something that I think people need to get a better understanding of, and I'm going to scroll down here, so give me a minute. Because somebody else wanted to know, maybe would a person that comes in that wants to lease a lot, that doesn't want to be an investor, doesn't qualify an investor, be able to, like, pay their lease up front and for some type of consideration. So let's say that, you know, let's say we're going to go with the $200. So 5 years of that is $12,000. You know, might we give then a 10% discount to prepay? Because that puts all that money up front for development. That's $12,000 we wouldn't have otherwise. And they can afford that, but they can't afford to buy in as an investor. Or they can afford that, but they don't, and they could even afford to be an investor, but for one reason or another, we don't select them. And they have the capital, and they want to make the savings of $1,200 in this case, 10%. We'd probably do that. We'd probably put a limit on how many years in the future you can buy. The one place I see lease prices going up are going to be commensurate with the whole system's property taxes, and there'll be a formula for that. And it won't totally be on the shoulder of the lessees. It really won't. It'll be based on the portion that they own. So if you have 1 acre, okay, but the whole property's 300 acres, you have 1/300th of the additional tax. And it has to be that way. It's the only way to make the system viable, and we have to have the consistent cash flow coming in and the offset expense. And that's as fair as I can make it. But I want to talk about the ownership thing and how people get kind of hung up on it here. Let me read my own comment first. Actually, it might work. This is giving the discount. The answer is it depends. My goal is to only ever have an increase in the rates as necessary to absorb all property tax rates. This front-end money for development, and I see this as front-end money for development, and I see a way to go about it and offer a discount of, say, 10% on prepayments. This will not make the person investor, though, simply reduce their total costs in return for upfront contributions. The lease fees can be thought of like an honest tax if something such a thing is possible. Here's what I mean. First of all, the lease fee is something you choose to accept. It's completely voluntary. Nobody's making you do this. Secondly, the majority of the cost goes directly to benefit you and your neighbors. This is not like a city tax where some board of directors decide they want to put in a traffic light and pay a contractor $10,000 to install it because he's the guy's brother-in-law. Right? And nobody really needed a traffic light there. Well, there's wrecks somewhere else, but because it would impact a view that somebody doesn't. I mean, it's not like that, right? The investors will take a share and we'll figure out what that is. And we'll tell you in advance what our share is going to be. Here's how we're going to get paid back. And here's our share after that is our annuity. And everything else goes in that community with heavy direction by you guys. Can't be raised other than by a predetermined formula, which you'll know going in order to simply offset raises in property taxes. We have to do that. Not doing so would put the entire thing in jeopardy, especially, say, 20 years down the line. If the tax bill goes up 300%, we got to do something because we got to pay it. Now, we'll try to do as much as we can with the community's profit to pay it. But the leaseholder has to be in for a share of that. And here's something else before I go on with my answer. The less we develop the property with services like outside grid power and things like that, the more rural and unimproved the property stays, and the property stays very low in cost. The next thing that makes it different is you can leave anytime and stop paying. We'll have a fairway for a person to leave if they choose. Somebody says, I just don't want to do this anymore. Maybe we'll say, well, okay, you pay 90 days worth of notice, and you're entitled to take anything you improve that can be moved with you. If you just say, well, I can't find a buyer and I just want to leave, okay, 90 days and you're out. That gives us time to try to find a buyer, and if we find a buyer ourselves, we'll let that buyer buy from you. We will not foreclose on your property in that 90-day period. Won't do it. So you say, I just can't find anybody to buy this. And we go out and we use our marketing apparatus to say, we have a leaseholder that wants to sell. Here's a description of their property. Somebody shows up and goes, I'll pay $10,000 for that. Fine, go see him. Buy out his lease. Then you owe us money. All right? They commensurate with the next one. Because the four above will likely never happen, as most people that want to leave can sell their position. I think the value of these leases will go up hugely over time. Six, you get a real say in how the money is spent. I and other owners are not your elected officials. We are a company that serves you. We might be benevolent dictators, but we are bound by a legal contract, and we will have to keep our customers happy. You can pick it all you want. Your town council or federal reps won't care. All you have to do to put us in line is everyone walk away for 2 weeks. You'll basically have us by the curlies, folks. We'll have to serve you. That's why we're owners, because we're going to have a vested interest in the survivability of the community. And we lose big time. We lose a lifetime annuity if everybody walks away from us. You'll never have that control with an elected official. Again, I think many are so obsessed with the ownership, they don't realize that leasing is ownership. Ownership of the lease. A well-managed property in this community may make a person a hell of a lot more in ROI in 5 years than a $50,000 investment. Say the numbers we tossed around work, $1,200 upfront and $200 for a month for 60 months. In that person is in for $13,200. So if they put $1,200 upfront, $200 a month, 5 years later they've now put $13,000 into the property. But they can sell their option to somebody else at any time. Say you were smart, put in only $8,000 into a creative construction and built a small house. An earth contact structure with passive heat and cooling. You fixed up your yard, etc. Now at 60 months, I might have my $50,000 back. Likely it'll take me another 12 to 18 months because of the 60-month payback is based on 100% occupancy. But in this time, we have put in 10 large ponds, community facilities, etc. We have workshops running 6 to 10 times a year. People are making money working in the facility. New improvements happen all the time. There are common areas, yoga classes, martial arts classes, etc. What is your little earth contact home worth now? $40,000 or $50,000? Beauty is, if you have trouble selling, you can own or finance. As long as someone pays the land fees, we won't care. So check this out. You're in this point with the property and the house for $21,200. But let's be honest, $200 a month in lease fees is less than you're going to pay to live anywhere. So you could almost take that money out, but let's not do it. Here's what I mean. I mean, you can't rent anything for $200 a month. You got it? So now you sell out for $50,000 with owner financing to a buyer at 7%. That's very fair owner financing percentage. Because if they could get the money elsewhere, they wouldn't need you to do it. So 7%. And you require a $10,000 down payment and a 120-month term, or 10 years. So 10% down, 10 years, owner financing at 7%. Now, at that point, who's in better shape, you or me, from a strict return of investment standpoint? Keep in mind, at this point, I haven't gotten my money back yet. My annuity might start flowing pretty soon for about $400 or $500 a month. Okay? This is what you got. You got $10,000 up front, and you're now going to get a payment from the guy that bought from you of $464 a month for 120 months. A total payment to you of $65,680. Your profit would be, in that scenario, again, it's just an off-the-cuff scenario, $44,480 in profit. Not bad. I mean, my hope is most people will never sell. But you know what? The fewer folks that ever sell, the more it's worth to a buyer when someone does. So if you have 100 leases and no one's ever selling, and all of a sudden one person says, I'm ready to do something else, I want to sell my lot, it's worth a lot more than if there's 10 available at any one time. But the facts are, in the above scenario, both the investor and the leaseholder have created about the same annuity in 60 to 72 months. The benefit to the true owner is, of course, his or her annuity won't run out in 10 years, yet owners take risks and must put up a lot more upfront capital. So you've only invested at that $21,000. I've invested $50,000, right? You get the same type of annuity I do for 10 years. You get $10,000 of your $21,000 back when you make that deal. And can I say you can do this? No, I'm just saying, or you will be able to do this. No, I'm saying you could. These are just some examples of how you might decide you wanted to exit. You buy a lot, you develop it, you go to sell it. No one can get a conventional bank mortgage loan. You've developed it debt-free. You own it free and clear. I don't care, as long as the person is willing to sign the leaseholder's contract when they make the purchase from you that makes them subject to the same restrictions you were, I don't care that they have financed it to you. I just care that they make their payment to me. What if they stop making payments to you and continue to make their payments to me? Then you come to me and we talk about how you might enact repossession, and we would support you in that. But I'm still taking their $200 a month. But in this state anyway, if you're running owner financing like that, it's actually pretty easy to take your property back. And most people that get into that bind would say, if I can just give it back to you, I will. And you'd be smart to take it back and just sell it again. There's just a tremendous number of options. The more I think about this, the more I think that, like, the more we can do without the state, without utility services, the better. And it might be that we can bring in that grid power and water and stuff down to a area, and we can, what's the word that I'm looking for? Segregate a piece of the property with legal structure to exist apart from the common properties and from the leasee properties. And by doing that, we can make sure that that power improvement and everything like that doesn't affect the taxes for the totality, only maybe an acre or two that has these facilities that are usable by our members that can come over there and use those services. And that might just really strengthen the ability to go partially off-grid or wholly off-grid. And, well, I don't want to do it. I want to bring in a power line. No one's going to stop you. No one's going to stop you from doing that. But then you're going to be subject to whatever that entails, and your neighbor won't be. And then again, like I keep saying, we may go out, find a piece of land, talk to the county, you know, talk to a lawyer, and they might say, you know what, we can just go in and do this much infrastructure, and we'll put a power pole at every lot. And then it's up to the person that uses that power to decide how they're going to do things. And they might say, you want a power pole, you have to put a septic tank in. I don't know. We'll find out when we get there. The key is, we'll make it work. And it might end up being the case that we say, you know what, to do this, we have to put in this much infrastructure. So the buy-in on the lease is going to be $5,000 versus $1,200. And I know there'll be people angry and mad and gnashing their teeth and telling me I went back on my word. There's no word yet other than we'll do this honorably and tell you going in what's going to happen. Again, Excel never lies. If that's what I have to do to make this work, then that's what I'm going to do. And I still think anybody that wants it can get in, and I think the value of your lease is higher. If the county says you have to have a septic system and you have to have a power station for every lot, fine. Well, then I can't grow in my little plot. Well, since there's like 200 acres of common area to grow stuff, you have plenty of space. Plus, no one says you have to use it. No one says you have to use it. Isn't that true? No one says you have to use that. And there's lots of ways to do this. And who knows, we might find a county that we can go present the whole thing to that says, we'll work with you. We'll work with you to make this work. And we might find another county that says, we don't want your kind around here, and we're not going to go there. We're going to go wherever this is easiest to do and give everybody the best value in return. And I do think that East Texas area looks good. That Palestine, Lufkin area, there's sizable towns there. You know, you could easily find a place located 30 to 40 minutes drive from a small town like that, big enough to have some employment activities, definite services, stores, supplies, and things like that. High probability of being able to bring grid power in, which I think is, again, I've talked a lot about off-grid. I want you to understand that that's not the goal. That's the fallback. I really want this thing to be on-grid, at least power-wise. I think it solves so many problems. And, you know, once that's done, then we can look at other things. And, you know, I've heard people say things like, well, you know, you have to have a septic tank to get power. I don't know if that's the truth. I don't know if that's true. I think if you're going to do conventional home construction, you do. But if you go in and say, you know what, we're not going to do septic systems, and we're going to require the use of composting and electric toilets, and we're going to restrict structures to this type of a structure, it could happen. I don't know. Again, do I want to restrict anything? No. Do I want this to work? Yes. Do we take the path of least resistance against authority to the greater end of self-sufficiency? Every single time. Every single time. Whichever decisions make it most feasible for people to live in a way that makes them happy, to have a workable solution, low-cost construction, sustainable construction, creative construction, with the least amount of somebody showing up and going, hey, what are you doing over there? I don't know. It could come down to a point where we come up against 100 different obstacles and we go, what happens if everybody has like mobile housing? And they go, well, then you can do whatever you want. Well, okay. Then, folks, you're building tiny house compounds on trailers and you're camping on your leased piece of land, even though you're staying there permanently. My point is there's always a loophole. And whatever place we set course on, when we say, on the day we say, okay, if you want to be a leaseholder, fill out this long application, not the short one we're doing for screening right now. And let's get your deposit, let's get you screened, let's get you background checked, let's get you in the door, let's get it done, and let's let you pick out your lot and move in. The day that we do that, and we take a penny from a single lessee, there will be concrete in-stone agreement to the basics. How you're going to access your land, what's going to be available and what's not going to be available, what infrastructure is already in and what is planned for the next 12 months, what restrictions there are, and what restrictions there are that prevent anybody from restricting you from anything. All of that will be concrete, on the ground, in paper, where you can look at it, written at an eighth grade level so that it's understandable, and we will not break our word to you. And we will ask you to not break your word to us and to the other members of your community. And we will shake your hand and welcome you as a community member. If you can find somebody that will do better for you than that, please take them up on the offer. There's not a lot of offers like this out there. Again, I know I might sound like I'm writing a few things off or just going, don't bother me with that right now, but it's because, okay, I want this to happen. I am now on a mission. I'm on a mission the way I was when I climbed into my Jetta with that little recorder and started the Survival Podcast. And I said, this will be something that will be here 5 years from now. This will be what I do as a full-time living. And I got infected with it and said, I'm going to change lives with this and I'm going to make this happen and this is going to get done. And when I was doing that, there were people, your audio's not good enough. Do this. Get a screener. Don't do this. Don't do that. Don't cuss. Do cuss. Yell. Do this. Do that. And I had like thousands of people screaming at me. Right? Within like the first 6 months, there were 1,000 listeners, and half of them were telling me why I was wrong for doing it the way I was doing it. And I said, I don't care. This is it. We'll figure it out when we get there. What are you going to do when you get to 10,000? I don't. Well, I'll figure that out when I get there. What happens when you get so popular your server crashes? I'll get a new one. And I did. And I just put my head down and my ass up, and I worked. And I said, this is going to be. And it was. And it's amazing what it became in 5 years. But you know what? It was in 24 months. In 24 months, it was a full-time income. A $30 recorder, a $19 headset, and a commute to work, and a commitment to get it done, got it done in 24 months. There's a lot of things I've wanted to do along the way, nothing this much, and that focused attention has now come to Perma Ethos. I will drive the shit out of this. I will make this work. And we'll do it in a way that no one's ever done before. Because if you've noticed, the things I've done successfully, they've always been done in a way that was never done before. Patrick Rohrman sold about $55,000 worth of knives in 6 minutes, close to $10,000 a minute, because we did something that never was done before. But it's something that is sustainable for him and for the people that got involved. No one's ever done anything like that before. And that's why people were like, oh, hell yes, I am so in on this. That's how this is going to be. That's exactly how this is going to be. We're going to have owners that aren't just owners and just like write a check and collect a dividend. We're going to have owners that get right in there as part of the community members. So somebody's asked me repeatedly, so will owners get a lot? Yes. Will they pay for it? No. Will they pay a lease fee on it? Probably. I think we will. It might cost me some owners. I doubt it. It's a small potato. It basically comes out of your dividend. But it puts our skin in the game with you. So we don't have a completely separate thing. So I have my own lot. I care about the roads and the infrastructure and the buildings and the privacy of the community and every bit as much as you do and more, because I have a second stake in it. So instead of having a different stake, I have the same stake in an additional one. And I'm looking for people like that. I'm not looking for, like, every owner doesn't have to live there. But if they're not going to spend any time there at all, it's probably not a good fit. You know, and there's certain investors you make certain key things for, and you make some exceptions for. But what I want to know from an investor, do you understand business? Can you make a cold, dispassionate, numbers-based decision, but still remain ethical and true to a guiding vision? Can you have a disagreement with another owner, hash out an idea, argue about it, be tough on each other because that's what you're there to do, and then walk away and sit down and shake their hand and put it all past and just go forward? Do you have money and I'm going to not put you into harm's way by you making this investment? And do you care about the ethics here and the vision here? Yeah? Okay, let's talk. Let's talk. Now, you also, if you also have skills and knowledge that you're willing to help develop with, not necessarily for a fee, but I mean, I talked to one guy already that's like, I can put in wells. I didn't really talk to him. He just sent me an email. I'm going to expect him to put in wells for free. But do I expect him to maybe do it for less? Yeah. Do I expect him to maybe do some of the things he normally charges for as a consultant for free and just charge for the labor and installation of materials? Yeah. Especially if he's an owner. It's in his best interest to. His cost is going against his own concern. So I think we have a tremendous opportunity. I think we're going to have people that know how to put solar systems in, just know how to do it. I think some of those people will get out there and show you how to do it and say, if you want certain levels of things done by me, I'm going to have to charge for it. But I think we'll be creative in how we do that. But what I want you to understand is the reason I'm saying some of these things, not right now, later shelf, never shelf, possible shelf, whatever, is because anything that gets in the way of getting phase one accomplished, I just don't have time for it right now. A gun range is not important right now. It's not. When we end up with 200 acres of rural property, there'll be room for one. I don't even care. Right? It's not that I don't want you to talk about it or ask about it. I'm just saying from my standpoint, it's got to go to the side until I get this done. I got to make sure that every penny that goes into this is protected. And I got to make sure we find the right piece of property and the right people. Well, that's what I'm going to do. So this went long, almost 2 hours. But hopefully it's given you a better understanding of my vision for this. I'm going to continue to do updates at permaethos.com. Please put questions and comments in this episode or this post, and I'll try to do this again. When it's a simple thing, I can do a blog post on it, I will. But I know this took almost 2 hours, but if I would have written text to all that, I would have been there for days. So this is not something like Survival Podcast. I'm not going to be doing these every day. But I'll try to, you know, at least once every couple of weeks, like answer all the questions like this, and they'll probably be much shorter, because I think most people have a much better understanding now of conflict resolution, infrastructure, and all these things that are like, yeah, we'll do that someday. But right now, we have to find the land, and we got to make it work. And I don't think we can start answering questions like, will residents get grid power or not until we find a piece of land? And then approach the entities involved. And we're not going to go out and buy a piece of land and then find out, oh, crap, we can't put power here. We're not going to do that. Anyway, guys, appreciate it. And make sure you get by permaethos.com and subscribe to the email updates for it. You'll find that at the top. And very soon you'll see some buttons or pages or links or something appear that'll say apply as an investor and apply as a lessee or potential investors, potential lessees. And there'll be a form there, and you can fill out that form. If you want to be considered for that, fill out those forms. This is going to have a lot to do with putting together a model. And that model has to go back to investors. So when I can go to investors and go, you know, we're looking at maybe 100 to 200 people that we want to lease, and we have 300 sitting right here, right now, here they are, that brings a lot of investor confidence. Anyway, with that, I'm going to wrap it up. Hope that many of you come along for me on this journey, because I'm taking it.